Hello, everybody, and welcome to Keyframe, the most animated podcast there has ever been or ever will be. So much animation happening here, you don't even know.
Woo.
You see all that,
that was like the weakest woo of all. You do not deserve
That's
to be
the joke.
You've let Ric Flair down.
I was about to say you have disappointed the Flair.
Right, on a scale of high octane battle scene to the static shots in Evangelion, we are wasting all the budget right now.
Yes, we are. I think it's official that Lewis this week is stop motion animated. Which means one of us is going to have to move his mouth for him to talk.
Well, I could do like a video game action scene and I could be like that for the day if you want.
Just slide in from the side.
Have three... Let's do this, come on!
No, Lewis walks like a cactor.
Slide in from the side, have three different reaction shots and text boxes at the bottom.
Yeah.
Two of them just ...
Yes. Anyway, yes, joining us this week are the lovely Dave.
Hello.
The lovely Ben.
I don't get my own adjective.
Okay, the fabulous Ben.
Thank you.
He has a rainbow on his t-shirt.
Yes, he does. The wonderful Lewis.
I think to this I'm going to say ellipses ...
And me, Rob. I am just Rob today.
Yeah, you don't get an adjective for yourself?
No, I need a verb rather than an adjective.
Very
the breathing Rob.
A verb is a doing word.
Yes, the breathing Rob. I'm happy to be alive.
And we've got a lot of stuff to go through, so let's kick it off with the news.
Yes. What have we got first, Ben?
Kick it off. Stan Lee's Mighty Seven. Now, who's the best Marvel character?
That's Stan Lee.
Stan Lee.
You do realise that sounds like a euphemism the way the headline works. Stan Lee's Mighty Seven.
Ah.
Only if you, like, really try for it.
Yeah.
Oh, Rob's always really trying for it.
I'm just trying in general.
So this is a new series coming out.
It's the prequel to Mighty No. 9. It's not. Don't believe anything I ever say.
Is it like Hero Man and his six friends?
Well, Hero Man was an animation produced by Stan Lee from a manga he wrote.
Yeah.
That has basically been forgotten by time.
Yep.
Despite being the illustrious Stan Lee, it's one of the projects that's kind of went like, off to the wayside.
Yep.
But he's starting with a new... This is a Western animated one, isn't it, Ben?
Yes. And it's about Stan Lee teaching a bunch of alien prisoners that have crash-landed on Earth how to be superheroes.
So Stan Lee is Mr. Miyagi?
So Stan Lee is Professor X.
Oh, yeah, sorry, Professor X. He could be Miyagi and Professor X.
He's Miyagi.
He could do psychic kung fu.
He is Miyagi, Professor X, and Nick Fury all in one.
So does it mean that like all of the X-Men's powers come from Stan Lee?
What's the name of the Suicide Squad? Amanda.
Amanda Miller.
Waller. Amanda Waller.
Waller, not Miller. Miller's Metal Gear.
Too much Metal Gear playing.
Because they're alien prisoners.
Yeah.
So I assume... Like, they don't have Earth's best interests in mind, so it's a bit like shepherding the Suicide Squad, I assume.
Yeah, that's a good analogy, although we've only got, like, the two images of it, and they all seem pretty up for it. But
they're all pretty up for it, you know, save the world.
They'll be up for being given superpowers. Yeah. Why are they aliens, though?
Well, that might be why they have superpowers.
Their powers are aliens. From their alien powers. Like, at the moment, the team looked like a giant fat guy that can turn into a ball... a super fast person, a woman with wings, a guy with a hand blast who looks sort of like he could be from a Deus Ex game. There's a guy
man.
Who just seems...
Yes.
Not sure what his power is. Maybe he just looks nice. And I don't know what that...
Telekinetic bald.
Yeah.
Baldy.
To me, it looks like she just has lava lamp powers just wobbling around her arms.
It looks like neon blue ramen.
Yeah, I can see that. So, leading man, Stan Lee. It's strange because like he has had sort of cameos in his animated series. Like, he has cameos in all the movies.
Yeah. In Hero Man, he was a character, but he was like... He was a guy that that drank coffee at the coffee shop that Joey worked at.
Yeah.
He would just go, "Fill her up, Joey."
Yep. Yeah.
That was a weird series.
The thing is, because I reviewed this after it aired, and I found it interesting that that with all of the, you know, the Marvel crossover moves into anime and the, you know, Batman manga.
At the time, versions. We were having adaptations of Iron Man,
Wolverine and the X-Men and various other things. And then Stan Lee came out of left field with Hero Man. And it was as if he was saying, look, instead of just trying to move the X-Men and stuff like that across to anime, you know, why not just do something completely new? You know, here you go. I've done a boy and his robot type story, which is something that the Japanese audience are very familiar with. If you want to crack the anime industry, this is what you need to be doing. It was as if he was basically throwing down the gauntlet to Marvel in general and saying, this is what you should be doing, guys.
To be fair, the first half of the series,
yeah,
against the insectoid alien things,
yeah,
actually not
really
bad.
Worked.
But
it was the second half.
Yeah. It got a bit weaker where they were being chased by the government.
Yeah, it got a lot weaker in the whole thing. Thing is, it worked partly because, you know, the big bully guy also got transformed, you know, and he became kind of a rival frenemy type character, and I liked that whole dynamic about he. You know, Joey just really annoyed the hell out of him because it wasn't that he disliked Joey in general, you know, because he knew his younger sister really liked him. It was basically just he didn't understand how somebody with so much potential just, you know, was just such a waste of space.
Yeah, I think that was the only strong character from the second series, really, yeah. Wasn't it?
Yeah, even Joey wasn't a strong character in the second half.
By the end of it, it's just, Joey! Hero Man!
Yes.
Joey! Just repeat until anime fit.
Oh, no. And every so often you have the cheerleader younger sister going, Joey! Sorry, we're off in our old little nostalgia world about Hero Man.
It's all right.
That's fine.
It's okay. No one else will, ever.
Yes,
it's not a fondly remembered series.
No.
It does have a cross-dressing episode.
Yeah, I know. That confused me.
A cool skateboarding guy with an afro,
yeah,
who's always in on crutches.
Yes, I know. I didn't understand that one either.
I think it's because he's not very good at skateboarding.
Yes. That would explain a lot.
But he keeps going.
Yeah.
If anything, that's the message of the series.
No matter how many bones I break.
He's an inspiration to us all.
Not that we can even remember
the
character's
name. Never give up,
even
if you should.
No, I honestly don't remember his name. All
I'll
remember
always remember
Joey.
You, crutches guy.
Crutching skateboard boy.
So, here's the thing. Do you think Stan Lee's going to voice himself?
I hope so.
But he is, like, 90 now. Over 90. Isn't he 95?
I don't know. I honestly don't know how old Stan Lee is.
There'll be a website, how old is Stan Lee? We'll find out.
I just think he reached the optimum of Stan Lee-ness sometime around 1972, and he's just stayed that way.
He is 92 years old.
Jesus.
And, he's no longer attending Comic-Cons or anything because he doesn't want to travel anymore. His appearance last year in England was the last time he's going to visit England.
I really want him to. I want him to reach 100 years old, and I want him to get a letter from the Queen.
But he's not. That's only if you're a British citizen.
Yeah, I don't care. I want him to get a letter from the Queen.
I wanted to get a comic from the Queen.
Yeah, the Queen. The Queen has done her own superhero called Your Majesty.
Her Majesty
has super royal powers of ordering people around.
Don't know, what superpowers would the Queen have?
The ability to order everybody
money,
to do
lots
things.
Lots and lots of money.
I'd like to think she has like a power burst laser thing, but she does it by her wave and it just sort of cups the air and fires it towards them.
I think you'll find you won't be moving. You're stuck in super sticky stamp glue.
Ooh, Queen, we'll get you next time.
Yes.
Go, corgis, attack him.
The corgis just suddenly transform into giant monsters. Yeah, with tiny little arms. I think it works.
So
there's an idea.
Stan Lee, get on it.
Super Queen, the animated series, get it made.
Yes. So, yes.
Actually, sounds more like a Cosgrove Hall kind of thing.
It could work because Danger Mouse got rebooted. So,
yeah
they could do a Super Queen.
Yeah, it was announced at San Diego Comic-Con this year. With a trailer and everything, and some voice actors from Game of Thrones and everything, so
If you want to learn more, check out previous episodes of Keyframe.
Yeah, but I mean, seriously, voice actors from Game of Thrones, I hope they don't forget which show they're in.
Oh, I hope they do.
Can you imagine that? All of a sudden, Danger Mouse just...
You know nothing, Danger Mouse.
Yeah, oh no, you know nothing, Penfold.
Be amazing.
Baron Greenback is like, you know, as... what's his face, you know... the Lannister boy who got poisoned.
Joffrey?
Joffrey, yeah. Baron Greenback is Joffrey. Just slipping out of character. Anyway.
Anyway.
Yes. So, Stanley, seven aliens, super team. You guys looking forward to it?
I think so, yes. I'm more curious than anything just to see how it's going to be with Stan Lee as a lead role.
I've got to admit, I'm actually looking forward to it, but... based on the fact that even after Stan Lee kind of ostensibly retired, he was still doing stuff in comics. Did you guys ever read any of the stuff he did with DC?
No, I did not.
He did a few alternate
origin stories for like Superman and Wonder Woman, and they were superb. I actually preferred his origin stories to the kind of traditional DC canon ones.
Well, Wonder Woman's canon one is awful and always has been. That's why nobody knows it.
Yeah, Stan Lee's take on it was much better. Much, much better. And his take on the Superman origin story was better as well. So, yeah. I'm actually looking forward to this just based on the fact that Stan Lee seems to be a do heroes.
The guy, he loves it too much. You can't leave it alone.
Yeah.
And if you've not seen Big Hero 6 yet.
Yes.
He's even got a little cameo on that.
Yes.
I suppose one question I have is beyond like, you know,
which I missed when I watched Big Hero 6. I didn't see it at all. I didn't see it until you guys pointed it out to me. I was like, oh, damn.
How is he involved in the production of it?
Big Hero 6?
Yeah.
I don't think he was involved in the production of it. I think it was just that picture of him.
I'm not sure. He might have been... Well, it's an adaptation of a comic, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know what involvement he had in the comic, but...
He might have just been a consultant.
I think it's basically just the same involvement that he has with like most of the Marvel movies nowadays, where he just sort of shows up and they give him a role.
Mm.
Yeah. Right, shall we move on?
But wait, just one thing. You saw Fantastic Four recently. Was Stan Lee there?
Not that I recall. Not that I can recall.
It's not a good sign. You don't have a Stan Lee in there somewhere.
Yeah, I this was horrible because people thought I was going to commit geek suicide because I watched Pixels on one day and then Fantastic Four the next day.
Yeah.
People were worried, man.
Oh, I'm going to throw in the last bit of Stan Lee-related trivia related to animation. He has a cameo in the 90s Spider-Man cartoon.
Yes, he does.
When there's the cross-universe event, there's a Spider-Man from our universe who has no powers and is just an actor that played Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And at the end of it, the Spider-Man from the cartoon universe goes to our universe, meets Stan Lee, and takes him for a web ride around New York.
Yep.
Cool.
It was a nice bit of fan service, though.
Yeah,
you know.
I think it might have been what the series ended on, wasn't it?
Yeah, it ended on that because that was after the whole kind of eventually became the whole Spider-Verse thing. It was basically Madame Web and all the other versions of Spider-Man, including Man Spider. So yeah. Anyway, moving on. Miraculous Tales of Ladybug and Cat Noir is coming to Nick on December the 6th. It's a CG animated action series produced by Zag Method Animation, Toei Animation, and Sam G. And it combines action-packed adventure with superhero elements. Now, it's two junior high school students, Marinette and Adrienne, who have been chosen to save Paris from the evil doings of a mysterious supervillain. Yeah, the storylines and adventures are rich with friends, family, fun, secret identity, transformation, villains, fashion, creativity, and more.
Right. I think whoever drew Cat Noir got the better deal.
Yeah.
Because the costume for Ladybug looks terrible.
Yeah, yes. I was going to say, so black polka dots are in fashion now.
Yeah.
If it's about fashion.
I can't disagree.
Cat Noir's got like a Catwoman kind of thing going on, so you can
imagine.
With
a staff weapon, whereas Ladybug has what looks like a yo-yo.
Hey, don't diss the yo-yo. I know a couple of animes where yo-yos have been like the ultimate weapon in the world.
I know one anime where yo-yos have been extremely effective. It's called Hunter Hunter.
Exactly. Oh, Killua as well.
Yeah, Killua yo-yos. The weighted ones with the electricity.
Is the electricity from the yo-yo or from him?
From him.
Yeah.
He basically channels it through.
If you play Terraria, yo-yos are some of the best weapons in the game.
Yeah, but if you've ever tried using a yo-yo as a weapon in real life, it just don't work.
No one can use a yo-yo as a yo-yo in real life. They can only do that on the internet.
I think that's why all those people learn the tricks, because they just can't do the normal up-down thing.
It's like, no, it meant to hit the floor. Look, I'm walking the dog.
Exactly.
There was those mechanical ones that would lock if you did them a certain way.
Maybe Ladybug is really good at yo-yo. Maybe that's what he does. But not to fight crime, just to distract criminals. Just like, hey, check
this. Look what
this.
I can do.
Meanwhile, Cat Noir sneaks up behind, hits him with the staff.
Yes.
Or hits the mic stand in your face.
Like an idea.
So, yeah, actually, that's a possibility. It is a very Catwoman vibe there.
Yeah.
From footage I've seen of it, so Cat Noir gets the bumbling idiot positioned in the sort of the duo.
Really?
Yeah, he's love struck with her, and she doesn't
do that.
And then he sort of
It
doesn't really sell it as being a guy.
Yeah, I was like, that's a guy.
Yeah, I'm surprised that's a guy as well.
Yeah, he's very effeminate, but yeah, that's a guy.
It looks a little bit like art style somewhere between The Incredibles and Big Hero 6, kind of like, and the same sort of like awkward smile faces.
Yeah.
Yeah. That does not sell it as a guy for Cat Noir.
I'm wondering how much of that is the sort of cat costume in a cat suit. Catwoman comes to mind.
There's a picture of the guy here, and it still doesn't sell it as being a guy.
But now that I've mentioned it's a guy, you can tell it's a guy. And the fact that they're probably...
Okay, it's a bit more apparent in his normal clothing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not completely 100% that's definitely a guy.
Well, I can tell you 100% it's definitely a guy.
Yes.
I've been following this for a little while because I think it looks interesting.
You're going to watch it then?
Oh, yeah. So this is actually animation coming out of France.
Yeah.
There's like, I don't know many French animation studios that have sort of got this bigger of a thing going.
Well, actually, France, is
massive for animation.
Yeah,
they're typically quite good, aren't they?
There are actually quite a few tax breaks in French for animation.
Yeah.
In France.
Yeah.
Similar to Canada, there's a lot of animation that comes out of Canada because if you produce animation games or a couple of other creative things, you're given tax breaks by the government.
Yes.
In order to like stimulate the thing. France then copied that, and there's some really good stuff. If you've not seen Belleville Rendezvous, you should have a look at that.
I was about to say Belleville
also,
Rendezvous.
Also, I'd recommend, if you're into anime, want something a little bit different, have a look at Wakfu.
Wakfu's really cool.
There's another one as well, because they remade...
If that had an English dub, that would be massive.
Yeah, that's what I'm meaning. Mysterious this is Cities coming over to England.
Yeah.
In the last couple of... I think it was... was it 2 years ago it came out? The remake of the old 1980s Mysterious Cities of
Gold. Yeah, a lot of people assume that that is anime.
Yeah, and it's not. It was done... I think it was a collaboration between the anime industry in Japan and various French companies.
And a weird one you might remember from your childhood might be called Lyoko.
Yes. Not from my childhood.
No, but it's about...
And possibly not from your childhood either.
It's about 15, 20 years ago. It was well circulated.
Yeah. I mean, it had a Wii game and various other things as well. I know my nephew was heavily into it, and I was like, I tried watching an episode. I just couldn't get my head past the animation and the art style. It just didn't sit with me.
Yeah, it's like 60% forehead faces.
Yeah.
That said, it's a little Teen Titans-y in terms of its looks. Maybe that appeals to a younger audience.
Yes,
but
yeah.
The art style wasn't really for me.
That's a very good point that Lewis has made, because, I mean, the Teen Titans cartoon still holds a special place in the hearts of a lot of people.
That's why there's been a lot of backlash to Teen Titans Go.
Yeah.
Because, well, it's a sillier take on the
But people
the
didn't
franchise.
Want... The thing is, what people liked about the Teen Titans one was that they had comedy, you know, with episodes like Mother May I and stuff like that, and the episode where Robin goes to meet the master of martial arts, and then the rest of the Titans are basically dressing up as Robin and playing with all this stuff, cutting pizzas with his Robin orangs. Are they called Robin orangs, or are they... what are they called?
I have no idea, but... yeah, I think people would have liked more content from the animated Teen Titans because it's actually like a lot better than the comic book Teen Titans, in my opinion. Especially depictions of characters like Starfire and Raven. And
yes.
It depends which versions of the comics you look at.
The books of New 52, Starfire, no.
See, I don't mind New 52 Starfire.
She could do with wearing a few more clothes, but then again, she is an alien, so maybe she doesn't feel the cold like we do.
It's more the like the older Teen Titans stuff that like the comic books that came up before that.
Giant. Yeah.
Oh, the giant 80s hair Starfire.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the kind of married with children wife.
And Cyborg was handled very well, whereas before he was purely a product of his time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
His origin story is tied into the civil rights movement, and it's a little heavy-handed.
Yeah, but yeah, I see what you mean about the Teen Titans look. It does. I mean, this cartoon does seem to be trying to capture elements of that, just in terms of the visual style.
Which one?
This one,
the one where
Ladybug and Cat Noir.
Yeah, I suppose in that instance as well, it's you can kind of see it in terms of the proportions and whatnot.
Yeah. Okay, moving on. Moving on to a different type of animation. Now, there is... are you guys familiar with the Gallipoli campaign of 1915? It was one of the most...
It's a little bit before my time, but it's one of the campaigns in World War One.
Yeah, it was infamous for being so poorly handled. It ended up in it's one of the costliest wartime blunders in the First World War, and one of the costliest ones in history in terms of the number of people that died for no real gain whatsoever.
Yeah, that happened a lot in World War One, partly because war had changed a lot when
has changed.
Well, the thing is, World War One, there were basically
World War One people who'd previously been fighting against tribes, were now fighting against
other people with weapons. Yeah. Not only that,
I mean, if you were scared, you were shot by your own side for cowardice, because cowardice was apparently a crime.
Yeah.
You know, I'm sorry, but being scared is not a crime. But yeah, that's basically how stupid the mentality was for a lot of World War One.
And a lot of the officers were public schooled rugby team guys who played everything as if it was a game.
Get more ball! More ball! Get the ball! More ball! I need more ball!
More balls, Rob?
Yes, more ball. Just the one. You don't need two on the field. Anyway, yes, this animated documentary feature, 25th of April... or 25 April, is premiering at the Toronto International Film Festival, and it's done by a New Zealand-based Canadian-born director, Liam Pooley, and it fuses documentary, fiction, and state-of-the-art digital animation in this in an astonishing recreation of the infamous Gallipoli campaign. And
I mean, it's interesting in that historical like documentaries normally use live action reenactment.
Yeah.
Because obviously no footage exists for this period.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'd normally see it as a live action reenactment period drama kind of depiction, but animation could be a way of bringing untold stories to screen, really.
Well, I'm liking the art style that they've chosen for this. It's kind of a cel-shaded kind of sketchy realism type thing. Do you remember I've forgotten the name of it. Keanu Reeves was in it, where they basically filmed it live action.
Scanner Darkly.
It's got elements of that with various other elements as well. And it's a lot more detailed than Valiant Hearts, for example. It's not like flash animated like Valiant Hearts was, but just looking at some of the screenshots of it, this is the kind of thing that I'd happily sit down and watch just for the art style and the animation quality. I mean, this looks like it just from these images, it looks like it manages to capture a degree of the brutality of that particular campaign.
Yeah, it's a very different way of... it's a very different subject for animation to tackle, really.
Yeah, and I think it's a, I think it opens some interesting doors, because over in Japan, they've been experimenting with live-action and animated documentaries with, for example, the Miyamoto Musashi one that came out a few years ago. And I think it's an it's relatively unexplored territory for the Western world.
I mean, there is a little bit. The History Channel does like to mix in CG animated stuff, especially for battles kind of things. That they'll add in, sometimes they've used footage from Rome Total War.
Yeah.
That was a good representation of the...
They actually had I think it was kind of like a game show.
I remember that, where they...
Yeah.
He's the war.
Historical battles.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
I liked that one. I thought it was an interesting.
It was cool, yeah.
I think it was an interesting.
But they do still use that sort of thing in historical documentaries occasionally. As in, mainly for the macro stuff like the battles, the zoomed out kind of.
Here's 8 billion units. You can see the scale of the war from this. Yeah,
yeah. Like the football commentary post match game. analysis kind of part of.
See, that would be interesting on a war footing.
They do it. No, they actually do it with, you know, like they'll draw on like arrows and like the flank, the cavalry came down this line.
Have you ever watched Korean TV when they cover like a StarCraft tournament?
Korean news is my favorite news ever. the coverage of the. If you're not aware, rather than get the footage, they do 3D animated representation of what
was
happened.
Was that Korean or was that Taiwanese?
Korean do it. I think Taiwan also do it.
Yeah.
But
I get confused between the two because they're both equally...
If you look up the footage for the 2015 British election...
Yes.
It's amazing.
Oh, remember the royal wedding.
It involves a foot race with...
The royal wedding with the queen outside the room with the pin.
I like the foot race with Miliband versus Cameron.
Yeah.
And Cameron's pushing a baby cart with Nick Clegg in it.
So
this is how the rest of the world saw our election coverage.
Yeah.
It's pretty accurate.
Yes.
Never even saw it myself. It sounds about right.
Just look up some of the animated Korean news reels and yeah.
They are hilarious. Anyway, yes, back to this 25 April documentary. I think it's... I'd be interested to see more documentaries done in this kind of style. Maybe not with this particular art style, but approaching animation as a potential for making documentaries.
There was quite a nice one about the... Romance of the Three Kingdoms era,
yes.
The Battle of the Red Cliffs. There's a really nice animated like adaptation of that.
Yes, I've seen that one. That one caught my eye as well. But I mean, I'd like to see more Western companies actually looking at animation as a potential medium for documentary making.
Yeah,
I think it's got a lot of potential, especially when it comes to historical stuff.
What makes you say that? Like, why animation over a live reenactment? Because I'm kind of wondering what made them choose to do this.
Well, when you do a live reenactment, say you're doing a documentary about ancient Egypt.
Yeah.
Okay. One of the problems with a live reenactment is that where the animation budget might run to a certain amount, and it might be expensive. With the live action, you've got to sort out props, you've got to sort out the set,
so
you've got to sort out all of these other things. And you know, in terms of the money, the costs can escalate when you're basically when you have to make multiple sets, because you can't just use.
Of course, it's expensive to make something live action to a good standard. I was just wondering though that with animation, obviously it's quite a flexible medium.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering like what they're going to do with that that they couldn't do with a live action.
Well, there's things you can do that are like the more symbolic kind of things, the more, for example, you have absolute control over every condition. For example, the weather, the lighting, the setting.
You can kill cartoon characters. You can't really walk up to a human on a thing and make it realistic by stabbing them in the chest.
Yeah, I see what you mean. I guess the idea behind what you guys are saying, it's probably going to be quite grounded.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because, of course, there's the practical benefits, the money, the flexibility. Yeah.
There's things that you can do with animation that you just simply can't do with live action.
Of course,
I mean, unless you spend a fortune on special effects.
I've recently sat down with my girlfriend, and I'm rewatching, and she's watching Fate Zero for the first time.
Yeah,
and we sort of discussed that as a live action series, there's certain elements that could not work, and it's weirdly, it's not the demons, it's not the, it's actually the depiction of the child murders.
Yeah, couldn't work. Because there'd be too much of an outcry.
Yeah.
You know. Anyway, moving on to the final news story. Shonen Jump Plus and Animax. Right. This is a competition run by Animax and Animax Broadcast Japan and Shueisha. Their scenario writing competition has announced a winner. It is Ryoto Hagi, who has won the award for the story Luga Code 1951.
Okay. So, tell me a little bit about the synopsis of one.
Right. The story centers around a young linguistic genius and university professor, Tester, who is introduced by his senior sergeant, Rosa, to the Allied Cryptanalysis Department. There he is tasked to break the enemy werewolf's code, because werewolves are a thing in this.
Enemy werewolves?
Yes.
I'm in.
Yeah. The werewolves are using this code to encrypt their radio transmissions, and when Tester listens to it, he's astounded to find out that the only sound the encrypted code produces is the howling of a wolf. Yeah.
I just guessed that and just went for it.
His research yields no results, and he resolves to capture a live werewolf for better cryptanalysis. After exhausting all possible means, he finally finds a female werewolf called Yonaga.
I see.
Yes. So we could end up with, you know, I would assume that this basically ends up in some kind of romantic situation between him and a female werewolf.
Kind of like the idea. Well, not basically, it doesn't have to be romantic, but the idea of in war, they used to capture the devices to make the, you know, that's what you do. You try and capture enemy tech so you could decode messages. Yeah.
Well, description of Yonaga. A werewolf girl, she has a human body but has the ears and tail of a grey wolf.
Of course she does, because Neko Mimi.
Yeah, the beasts who grow fangs like a werewolf's can no longer transform, but they hold a mysterious power.
So, in other words, she's...
All that moe.
She's like a werewolf, but not too werewolf.
Yeah.
It doesn't really seem like it's going to be a case of like, oh, here's two completely different groups coming to a bit more of an understanding through exposure. It's definitely sort of, it sounds like it's going down that route a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Could be interesting. Which, I mean,
it could, depends how they handle it. Yeah.
I mean, the time frame allows for like a nice art style.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Well, I mean, it's getting, Hagi won 2 million yen, $17,000 about, for the competition. And his story is going to be adapted into a manga within the year, and it's going to be on Shonen Jump Plus, which is the digital manga service. Yeah, the panel of judges who chose the winner include the artist of Madoka Box, Akira Akatsuki, Croker's basketball creator Tadatoshi Fujimaki, School Rumble creator Jin Kobayashi, the director of Junjo Romantica and Higurashi, Chiaki Kon, and the Precure script writer Yoshimi Narita.
Okay.
So quite a varied selection for the
judging
panel.
Is this competition happening again? Because I need to submit my ideas.
It'll probably happen next year.
I won't remember that. Someone set me an alarm.
You've
been nominated to be Dave's alarm for this competition.
Oh,
you have a schedule. You're a teacher now.
Yeah, a teacher from a Ben student, is, not Dave.
Ben is organized
you'll
now.
You'll happen to be awake, though. You'll be awake.
Yes. Anyway, we are going to move on because we got a lot more stuff to cover in the show. But before we do that, does anyone else have any news that they want to add?
That's all I've got.
Okay.
Nope.
Okay, so that was the news section for this this week. Rob, I believe you have some reviews for us on the table.
Yes, I've got Bleach and Fairy Tail. So, dealer's choice, which one do you want first?
Right, let's get it over with and finished, by which I mean Bleach. Over with, finished.
Yes, because Bleach, this is Series 16, Part 2, and this is Episodes 355 to 366, which is the final episode of Bleach.
So the Fullbring arc.
Yes, it's which... the Fullbringers. And the thing is, it's the culmination of the Fullbringer arc, which also culminates in Ichigo getting his Shinigami powers back. Because
yeah, sort of.
You know, I'm not going to spoil the ending for people who haven't watched it yet, but the Fullbringer arc was one of those arcs that it confused me a little bit. Because I understood the purpose of it, but I didn't think it was absolutely necessary.
It kind of... Chad's seen prominently in the arc.
Chad is very prominent in the arc.
Because it's the first explanation of Chad's powers, in a way. Because he was a normal human who could punch things.
Yeah, with his El Diablo Muerte, or whatever it is.
Arm with racing stripe.
Yeah, he...
No, but, other arm with racing stripe.
But where did they come from? What were they? What... was never explained.
I like
and
the fact that
they're basically manifestations of a Fullbring.
Yeah. Which doesn't really get explained properly, I'll be honest. I mean, the whole what exactly a Fullbring is doesn't really get explained properly.
It seems to be an object or something that with enough like faith behind it, humans can manifest things.
Do you know the weird thing is, you know, the whole it kind of touches on the whole Japanese folklore bit of when you have
it's like
an
a totem, isn't it? It's like a
kind of like a totem, but also when you have an object for a certain period of time, say your family has had an object in their house for like 100 years, it develops its own soul type thing. Which it
through contact, through association, it takes on characteristics.
It kind of works a little bit like that, but it's never fully, you know, it's not fully realized in the same way that the Zanpakuto. Mm-hmm. You know, we know what Zanpakuto is. We have a lot of, we have some idea of what the Quincy abilities are. The Fullbring stuff, not really so much. And it would have been nice if they kind of extended that so we actually had a better explanation of how the Fullbringers actually fit into the whole power system.
Well, I don't think we're ever going to. There's a few of them that do survive and will appear in the manga.
Yep, they
but
do.
Not the anime, because this is the end of the anime and has been for about... Did it finish about 4 years ago?
Something like that. Actually, three years ago, I think it was.
But it stopped airing about 3 years ago and this is the ending.
Yes.
But more... It's a running out of steam ending than a...
I think it ran out of steam. The thing is, the perfect ending for Bleach, still, for me, is final Getsuga Tensho, Ichigo loses his powers. He sees, you know, his friends, you know, Inoue and Chad are still dealing with various problems, you know, and Ishida is still dealing with various, you know, problems to do with the spirit world. But he is no longer involved, and he's happy with that because he's done his part. He's done more than his part.
But this arc,
is basically, oh, we need him. We need to bring him back. And I would have, it would have been great if Tite Kubo, or Tite Kubo, however you want to pronounce his name, it would have been great if he'd basically said, okay, we're going to move the story now to Chad and Orihime and Ishida. So we may bring Ichigo back later on. He may have a part to play in this still.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we don't know. But we're going to just leave him to one side and we're going to focus on these three characters instead and make them the focus of it and continue on that way. That would have been interesting.
Unfortunately for me, this arc comes off a little bit like the filler arcs, like the Bount arc.
Yes, it's exactly like
that. That's what made me give up on the anime. I got to the Bount arc and I was out.
Yeah. I think that a lot of people by this point had actually basically gone, yeah, I'm done.
There is, if you're a fan of the series, there is a nice moment at the end.
Yes.
You know, it's a very fan service heavy moment. Not in, I don't mean there's...
I know what I mean
is like...
With all the captains and everything like that, yeah. There is that moment at the end, but in the run-up to that, it's just basically fight after fight after fight and people having fights with more fights and more swords and more fights and fights and more fights and more fights and not much in the way of Machiavellian plots.
It's never going to... We've had the climax.
Yeah.
you know,
it's never going to match up to final Getsuga Tenchu.
You've had the biggest battles. You've had the battles that mean the most.
Yeah.
And more battles after that are kind of...
Well, I mean, the thing is, when you get to the point of Aizen basically becoming a superior being, and then Ichigo outclasses him completely because Ichigo's power is so great that Aizen can't even recognize it. You know, and Aizen suddenly realizes that, yeah, this guy, I don't want to mess with him. Aizen basically loses, but Ichigo has to give up all of his power in order to get to that point.
Yeah.
After that, where can you go? You know, there's not much, when you've gone that high, there's nowhere really to go. And it took a while for Bleach to get to the point of actually achieving that level.
Yeah. I mean, and even before the Aizen fight, you'd had things like the Ulakira fight, the Grimmjow fight.
Yeah.
This series doesn't come anywhere near.
No. This part of it doesn't come anywhere near. With the DVDs, a couple of things that annoy me with the DVDs. You have the Japanese with subtitles and the English, you know.
At this point,
but when you go into the episode, because it plays episode by episode instead of like all of it at once, it just plays episode, then episode. That's all.
Does it not just have a play all?
It has a play all, but it just basically does it episode by episode. The play all is just episode by episode. Mm-hmm. Even if you click play all, it does episode by episode.
Right.
Problem is, you can't switch language mid episode, and you can't activate the subtitles mid episode.
Well, that makes sense. They're probably different files entirely.
But that's what I'm saying. I clicked on two of these DVDs. I clicked on Japanese with subtitles, mm-hmm. and it played the English version.
Right.
So I had to go back, click Japanese with subtitles again, all the way back to the root menu, click Japanese with subtitles again, and then it played the English file again. Eventually, I got it to play the Japanese with subtitles version, but I couldn't do it in the middle of the episode, which annoyed me a little bit because it was quite frustrating to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, with it being such a long series, way back when they picked the voice actors for specific roles, they picked them thinking, yeah, it'll work for now. It's fine for now. Unfortunately, it doesn't quite work with certain characters. The vice captain of one of the squads, the one with the numbers tattooed on his face and the lines.
Shuhei,
yeah. His English voice actor is a bit too high pitched for such a manly role. He's supposed to be quite hard as nails, and you expect his voice to have a lot more bass and be a lot deeper and more aggressive, possibly a bit more gravelly. But he sounds like a school kid,
right? To be honest, I've not seen the dub. I'd watched the early series with the dub,
yeah,
and then the dub didn't exist because I was watching the like Japanese subs when it was airing,
yeah.
So after a point, the dub didn't exist. So I've not actually seen the dub of this late in the series.
The thing is, they've got some good characters in the dub, but in general, the dub is just kind of, it's a bit piecemeal.
Right.
So, that was the end of Bleach. Cue the movies and the OVAs.
But for now, there's going to be a big gap in any sort of Bleach content.
Yes. But replacing that... Filling in the gaps from that, and if you can't get One Piece...
you can always get more One Piece.
...is Fairy Tail. And this is also out from Manga Entertainment and Kodansha and Funimation. This is Collection 4, which contains episodes 73 to 96. Now, the first three episodes of this collection are... Basically, they're a little bit of a carryover from the Daphne arc. And these three are basically filler episodes. The first one is Rainbow Sakura, which is the blooming season of the cherry blossoms in Magnolia Town, that, you know, the cherry viewing, that sort of thing. 74 is Wendy's first big mission.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so obviously Wendy goes on her first mission with Charles, and obviously she's secretly followed by the rest of the Fairy Tail guys who are worried about her doing her first solo mission by herself.
Wendy is a delicate flower.
Yes, she is.
But the episodes you mentioned, it's probably worth noting that Fairy Tail is available on Netflix.
Yep.
It only goes to episode 52.
Yep.
So this series and the one before it, if you've watched it on Netflix and you want to see more, this is the way to do it. Also, I believe they put it out on their official YouTube channel, but But again, only till about episode 50.
Yeah.
So if you have became attached to the series, Manga Entertainment's...
Yeah. I'm confused by something. The episode 73, right, is the Flower Viewing Festival. Now, that's called Hanabi, isn't it? Is it Hanabi or Hanami?
I'm not sure.
I think it's Hanabi, because I remember, ironically enough, Yozakura Quartet, the main female character from that, has an attack with that word in, which is something flower festival type thing. Anyway, episode 75 is the final one on the on this whole kind of filler episode bit.
Mm-hmm.
This is the post-Daphne arc filler episodes, and it's the 24-hour endurance road race, which actually was a surprisingly funny episode because it reminded me a little bit of Wacky Races. But with mages. Then after that, it moves into the Edolas arc.
Mm-hmm.
And much of this collection is the... in fact, all of this collection is pretty much the Edolas arc.
That's the
alternate world, the Lacrima, no magic, and the alternate version of Fairy Tail, all of whom have no magic.
Yeah.
So, yeah, basically, they're kidnapped, they're taken to Edolas, and the people there, the king there, wants to turn them into these magic crystals that they use for power. Certain members escape and cue the big fight, and they meet their alter egos, their other versions of themselves. But they also this is where Charles is from, and Happy.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're I've forgotten the name, the X something, the Exceeds, that's what they are. They're part of a race of flying magical cats called the Exceeds. And Charl is kind of like a princess.
In Edolas, yeah.
In Edolas. And she was supposed to inherit the throne from the current queen, I believe. And Charl has... It's where we find out that Charl has certain abilities to predict the future.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she gets certain visions about the future. The Edolas arc, I actually think, was one of the more interesting arcs from Fairy Tail, because... You got to find out more about Mistogan.
Yeah, I was actually a little disappointed by the reveal of what Mistogan is, because it's the reveal of every reveal in Fairy Tail. Should I not spoil that?
No, don't spoil it. But you know, you get to find out more about what Mistogan is. But the thing that got me was that if he's from that land, how the hell is he able to use magic?
Well, he does use a lot of items magical items.
That's where... if they actually did a story about how he became an S-class wizard, because he is one of Fairy Tail's S-class wizards.
Yeah, he's one of the mysterious ones that just shows up every now and again.
Yeah, like Gildarts. You know, Gildarts turns up every now and then. He's like, yeah, I killed this. And you're like, oh. I think it would have been nice if they'd done some more stuff about Mistogan. And the fact that he looks like a certain other person, right? That was a bit of a reveal as well, which I'm not going to go into. But yeah, we're trying hard not to spoil things here, aren't we, Div?
So, it's hard when you're reviewing a part that's so late into a show.
Yeah, I know. But yeah, I found it one of the more interesting ones because it was a look at how a society that had Fairy Tail in it functioned without the whole idea of magic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what they were doing to try and basically survive, which was basically kidnap people with magic and turn them into crystals so they could use them to power lights and stuff like that, as you do.
It sounds a bit like the plot for Final Fantasy VI.
Yes, it does. I think that's where he's nicked it from.
What are you suggesting? The creator of Fairy Tail nicks things from other sources there,
Rob? Oh, perish the thought.
He's heavily inspired by One Piece. He doesn't steal things by One Piece.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't. I will say he doesn't. He doesn't steal. He just is influenced by. So yes. Anyway, the animation is it's a bit weird because Fairy Tail has managed to maintain a certain standard of animation all the way through, and it's of a decent level. And I've got to say, I actually prefer some of the animation in Fairy Tail to kind of latter day Bleach, where it just seemed like everyone had given up by that point.
Yeah.
You know, But that's not to say that it's like that's not to say it's on the level of, say, Fate Zero.
No, unfortunately, I'd say Fairy Tail, even though it's still currently airing, looks like a show that could have been currently airing 10 years ago.
Yeah.
It's definitely not 90s animation. It's a step beyond that, but it's not really much further. No. I mean, you mentioned Fate Zero.
Yeah.
I've been watching a lot of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure lately.
Yeah.
The animation and quality in that is really good.
Oh, God, yes.
And there's a lot of stuff now that shows that you don't have to look like generic shonen.
Even Hunter x Hunter.
Yeah.
You know, and that's kind of what I mean when I say it's fairly, you know, it's fairly of the level. It's kind of what you'd expect from Fairy Tail. If you've watched Fairy Tail, if you watched a few episodes of Fairy Tail, you know the kind of animation level to expect.
Well,
the character designs are obviously, you know,
it's very sort of like, let's say, like 2007.
Yeah,
kind of, and not progressed beyond that really. No.
And the thing is, I don't think it should. You know, for the time being, I think with the new series that started, you know, maybe they could have looked at progressing the animation quality a bit more with the new series.
Mm-hmm.
But from that, it doesn't look like they have as well. But with this, I can understand why it stayed at a certain level, because it was a weekly show. It was coming out on a weekly basis. You know, they had to basically get it out there as much as possible. But overall, it seems like they've taken a degree of care with it, which, unfortunately, we seem to be lacking in latter day Bleach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in terms of the audio quality, the voice acting in the English dub is, again, kind of, it's a little bit here and there. It's a little bit hit and miss. There are some characters who sound great, and there are some characters who just don't work. But
unfortunately, it's
to be expected.
Fairy Tail has a massive cast.
Yeah, that's to be expected when you got such a big cast. There are going to be characters who just don't seem to ring true.
You can almost see why a voice is phoned in when this character will appear for one episode and that's it.
Exactly. And the thing is, with the Fairy Tail movies, they've taken a lot more care. The Edelas arc, as I said, is one of the more interesting arcs. And it culminates with episode 96, which is the return to Fiore.
Mm-hmm.
But the return to Fiore with a particular character in tow. And I'm not going to say which character that is, but it's a character who's supposed to be dead.
Mm-hmm.
Not a llama. They're supposed to be dead. They weren't turned into a llama at all.
Okay.
Yes.
But yeah, without spoiling it, that's the arc in question.
The thing that kind of bugs me about that character's return is that it didn't really change any of the dynamics in the relationships, which I thought it would have done.
Mm.
But it didn't really, ultimately. But we'll leave that for... We'll leave that discussion for the part 5 of Fairy Tail. But yeah, that's out now. That's out now from Manga Entertainment. So if you're a Fairy Tail fan, it's definitely worth checking out. And if you've not seen Fairy Tail, it is one of the more interesting arcs. I found it a lot more interesting than the Daphne arc. Let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Anyway, we are going to move on because the new season of anime has started. So we're going to have a little discussion about that. And also, we've got some new Western cartoons as well to talk about.
A few shows are starting back up again now.
Do you want to kick us off with those then, Ben?
If you don't know, we're huge fans of Steven Universe here, and the new series has just kicked off.
I hadn't been keeping up, so I'm actually 2 episodes behind now, I think.
Oh, for shame.
Are you familiar with Steven Universe, Lewis?
I've seen an episode or two.
What's your opinion of it?
I don't feel like I've seen enough of it to really have a strong opinion, but it's pretty funny. The animation seems decent. It's not really the kind of thing. I don't think it really grabbed my interest personally, but it seems like a good, decent show.
Now, the reason why I'm asking Lewis,
a lot of people who've watched it, it kind of doesn't grab you until about 40 episodes in, when some real actual plot development happens, and it goes from being like wacky thing of the week to
so it has like a series of connected events, and it is a definite turning point
that there's been hinted at previously, but very small hints that don't tie together till you know the big picture.
The episodes aren't that long though, are they?
About 10 minutes, but it's a Cartoon Network show, so it's
like 2 per thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, you know, in total, it's only, you know, compared to a normal show, you'd say, you know, 20 episodes to get into it. But it's a really long series.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, Ben's a massive Steven Universe fan, which is why I asked Lewis.
But not just Ben. I was at a convention yesterday, and the amount of cosplayers from it, the amount of the artist alley is full of it. It has captured a lot of people's imagination. The people that are into it are very into it.
Yeah, but dressing as Steven from Steven Universe is kind of a lazy cosplay, isn't it?
It is, but people do like the lazy cosplayers.
Yes, they do.
It's true, they're easy and cheap to pull off.
A lot of people have cosplayed Rose Quartz, which is more difficult to do.
That hair, there's so much of it. I still got a Tiger Millionaire planned out. Need to get that done.
See, that name always confuses me. Is he a millionaire in tigers? Does he have like a million tigers?
No, he's a tiger that is a millionaire, Rob.
How did you not get that from the fact he's got the tiger snout?
I said the name. I understand it from the... When you look at him, you totally get it. But when you just look at the name, and you've never seen a picture of them... Because I'm talking about before I knew anything about Steven Universe.
He's a wrestler. He comes on stage with a tie, briefcase, and a tiger mask. He's a tiger millionaire.
No, but that's what I mean. I hadn't seen a picture of him. All I saw was the name, and it confused me. I was saying, oh, so is he a tiger who's a millionaire, or does he just have a million tigers?
Either way, it's not someone you'd want to mess with in the wrestling ring.
Yes. Anyway.
MLP also started up. The hiatus is finally over. I can't remember what site it is, but there's a site is actually... made a t-shirt up saying I survived the hiatus, because apparently apparently a lot of people might have dropped off because of this hiatus. It's a bit of a shame.
I think it might be that there's more other shows out there now.
Yeah, I think there's been a lot of competition that's like sprung up in Western animation.
When My Little Pony first started, things like Adventure Time were only just starting.
Yeah. Yeah,
and now that sort of created the new wave of Western animation.
Yeah.
Most of the new stuff coming out is people who worked on Adventure Time.
Yeah. We were talking about this the other day, like Lauren Furst, who did this latest seasons of My Little Pony. Well, she kicked it off. She's not on the project anymore.
She's also she was the showrunner behind Powerpuff Girls.
Girls, Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends. She has her own cartoon idea about, like, roller skaters in space, and it looks amazing, but it'll never get done because she hasn't worked on Adventure Time, and only on Adventure Time people seem to get to make their own cartoons nowadays.
Sorry, roller skaters in space just reminds me of just like
Gem or something.
No, Jupiter Ascending. Bad memories of Jupiter Ascending. Channing Tatum and his flying rollerblades.
Is it that bad?
He even gets bird wings at the end. He's a half wolfman, half bird thing with roller skates that fly.
It's imaginative.
It makes no sense.
Okay, so...
So, yeah. Any others that are coming out, Ben?
As far as I know, that's like the big things. Like everything else is either just carrying on or...
Okay.
But there's no big new announcements.
Okay, cool. Let's move on to the anime stuff then.
The fall anime.
Yeah, the fall anime. So, guys, what have you guys kind of singled out as potentials for your viewing pleasure?
To be honest, last season...
One Punch Man is out of bounds, by the way, because that's pretty much a certainty.
Yeah, that's the big one. That's like, but a lot of the ones... Yeah, last season, there's a few that I generally wait until there's an episode out at least.
Yeah.
Because I can't go by much on a synopsis.
Yeah,
so,
definitely.
I mean, we did on a previous Keyframe episode.
Yeah.
Look at the first couple of episodes season.
We'll be coming back to this after this is just kind of a preliminary pick out, you know, what are you singling out? I mean, I've got a couple that I already know I'm going to be sitting down to watch. But that's because there are continuations of stuff that haven't been out for a while. K Return of Kings, for example, it's a continuation of K Project, which I think Ben reviewed quite recently. You know, the one where the episode we called I Can't Find the K, because you couldn't find any information about it Googling it, because it was just called K.
Oh, yes, I do remember that.
Have you ever tried to Google K? You just put K into Google and then press search?
I might have done once, but I figure, like, well, might as well put KOF afterwards since I'm searching for the character from King of Fighters.
No, it's even worse when you put K and then anime, and you get all the anime with the letter K in it.
So there's a new there's a new Mobile Suit Gundam anime coming out.
Yeah.
It reminds me, from the synopsis and from the art for it, a very sort of Turner kind of vibe.
Yeah.
Basically, it looks a lot more gritty, I'd say realistic, but it's not going to be that realistic.
Yeah.
About a revolutionary war.
Yeah.
But it's set after, to the point, well, after, like, the Gundam Wars, to the point where Gundams are lost technology. This is why it reminded me a lot of Turn A.
It's interesting you say that, because one of the ones that I singled out is based on a manga that I read, which is, again, based on a light novel called Heavy Object. It's basically about this guy's come to a military base to study these things called objects. They're new weapons that
he's
have
studying
completely,
objects.
Yes, they're new weapons that have completely revolutionized war as we know it. Battles are fought by soldiers controlling objects from far away from harm. But when he starts to get close to a particular object pilot, he discovers a grim truth behind heavy objects. So, yeah. It's an interesting manga, and I'm interested to see how they handle it with the anime.
I think the scientist who found out about objects was having a very lazy day when it came to naming conventions.
Yes. It's stuff.
Quick,
things.
Get the thing.
Is it like Giant Robo, where they just, like, it's a giant and it's a robot?
No, sometimes, to follow, huh? Sometimes naming things what they are works.
Caped Baldy, for example.
A rocket punch.
Yes.
It's simple. It does what it says on the tin. But just calling something as vague as an object is a little too vague.
Yeah. Another one that I'm keeping my eyes on, that I'm probably going to end up watching, is the new addition to Utaware Rumono. You're not familiar with it? Basically, it's Utaware Rumono was one of those fantasy anime, and basically you have a guy in a mask. He's supposed to be like this demon king type thing, but nobody actually knows where he is. He's leading people in a war, blah, 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 blah. It's got some harem influences, and it is kind of evolved from an eroge.
Mm-hmm.
So it was one of the
That's
ones
not
that
a bad thing.
It's
I mean,
not a bad thing.
Fate series is from...
Effectively, yeah.
True.
And that culminated in Fate Zero. So, yeah, it can evolve into something really special. We know that. Tears to Tiara, the original series, came from an eroge, and that was actually a pretty solid fantasy series. The original series of Utaware Rumono was actually quite solid in terms of its fantasy. It didn't really have any much in the way of fan service or anything like that. It stuck solidly to fantasy story type thing. And mainly watching it for the nostalgia effect, because I've seen the first series and I want to see how they handle this new version of it. That's kind of what I'm looking at in terms of, you know, stuff that I've watched before. What about you guys? Anyone else?
I literally just looked through the list and singled out a few things based on how they looked and, you know, how different the synopsis seems from what I'm accustomed to.
Yeah.
Dance with Devils stood out to me because, you know, when you got a lot of, it's essentially, I don't know if it's a harem anime, but it's about a girl who is surrounded by these beautiful men, but they're all devils, and it's a sort of
reverse harem type thing.
Yeah. So I guess you could call it that. I've never seen anything like that, so that sort of stood out to
that
me.
That seems more like by choice than because, yeah, there's a lot of, especially sort of supernatural reverse harems.
Yeah, it's true. I know they exist, but it's something that, you know, that I lack familiarity with. And just the amount of normal harem stuff that gets shoved in your face, it's kind of like, you know, let's just see it from another perspective for once. But yeah, there was no real reason for that other than that. There's an anime coming out called Shin Atashinchi, and it's about a family, and it's a sort of slice of life type thing.
You like this one because of the art style?
Yeah, what stood out to me was the art style, the fact that it's a 2005 anime, and it looks like something from, you know, 80s.
Yeah.
You know.
It reminded me a little bit of, you know, Sazai-san.
Mm.
It reminds me a little bit of that. And actually, I'd be interested in watching that one as well, because I do have a soft spot for Sazai-san, which is kind of in the same mold as this one. You might be interested in checking that one out as well.
I mean, one we singled out was Concrete Revolution.
Yeah.
Mainly because the art style I just like the look of it.
Yeah, it's very...
It's kind of no game, no life.
What I was going to say, with the coloured lines and the sort of the gradient colours, and it does look a lot like No Game, No Life.
Yeah.
And it's about superhumans having battles.
Yeah.
But everyone looks very stylish, very good character design, so it could be good.
Yeah.
And it's like, with a nice character design, with nice art style, it looks like it would be like... more style than the shonen anime that we were talking about, like Bleach and Fairy Tail that we reviewed earlier.
Yeah, one that I'm
like
actually
when the fighting's all about the spectacle, having a style that's very spectacle can be a really big plus.
One that I'm actually one that really caught my eye because it's a horror, and this season it seems like horror is very much in the minority with the fall anime season. This one is a horror called Koabon, and it's animated using rotoscoping and, you know, live action footage.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's a kind of animation style they use in Flowers of Evil.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, if anyone doesn't know what rotoscoping is, it's simply drawing over live action.
Yeah,
it's a kind of like tracing almost.
Yeah,
but it was
Disney used to do it a lot.
Yes, yeah. Snow White. There's footage of the actors and actresses doing the parts while.
It's Snow White did it. It was also in, you know, the original Ralph Bakshi Lord of the Rings.
Mm-hmm.
That used a lot of rotoscoping. Prince of Persia, the original Prince of Persia game, used rotoscoping. So, yeah, I'm actually interested in that and how it applies to how it's going to work with horror anime.
I got that really confused for a second, because when you said the first Prince of Persia, I was thinking Sands of Time. Like, how would you draw a 3D character? Oh,
yeah, I was thinking that as well. But...
There's Ben showing his youth. I have to say it like that.
Hey, that hurts.
So, yeah, I've seen anime before that use rotoscoping, and I always felt it looked a bit weird and it didn't quite work.
Maybe,
but
that...
because this is a horror setting, I think that style could work quite well.
Yeah. Well, see, the funny thing is that with Haku no Hana, a lot of people said it looked creepy.
It was supposed to, though.
Well, yeah, that's why it might work for a horror. Maybe they don't have to apply it to the faces so much if it doesn't work is a general sort of thing. But, you know, yeah, it looks kind of different. It looks kind of weird. But at the same time, it looks more realistic. It might work for horror.
Yeah. I mean, one other one that caught my attention was Kagawani. I seem to be going for the one-name titles a lot right now, especially with the K. Kagawani, it's a story about mysterious monsters that appear and attack in present time. It seems to have elements of Attack on Titan to it, but I'm interested in watching it because
should I just throw in, speaking of Attack on Titan, we have the launch
Junior High spin-off series, Attack on Titan Junior High, for all of you Attack on Titan fans who
it stops at 25, doesn't it?
Yeah,
the manga continues and the series stopped at 25, but
there is a second season coming out, but they're working on it now.
It's been a long time, and it was a massive thing, so people want more content, and pretty much the only content available is more merch.
At least with the junior high school one, the characters have more than one facial expression, which is intense.
See, I want them to play it up and just have Aaron with an even more intense face constantly.
No. You just want him to have that intense face while he's waiting for the toilet.
I've noticed this is a new thing to do, this weird chibi spin-off thing of, like, the major shows, because Naruto's got the Rock Lee thing, doesn't it?
Rock Lee's Springtime of Youth.
Yeah.
One of the lists...
I actually quite like that.
I wonder why they're so popular.
One of the ones in the list there was the new series of the DD spin-off of Fist of the North Star.
With Strawberry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a super deformed chibi spin-off of Fist of the North Star. And
Lewis was so shocked he dropped his phone.
Fist of the North Star is Mad Max with punching.
And Strawberry is not.
Fist of the North Star is why your parents wouldn't let you watch anime when you're a kid.
They need to make it incredibly violent and bloody.
Yes.
Like just chibi, like the bloody original. Yeah.
Strawberry advertised baby milk and had a milk bottle in his mouth Well, he advertised baby milk. So, yeah.
We're just going to throw one more out there just because the synopsis sounds a bit ludicrous to me.
Yeah.
It might be good, it might not be, but it's called Lance and Masks.
Yes.
Where by day he is a normal high school student, but by night he is secretly a lance-wielding knight.
Yes. Lances seem to... The weird thing is, ever since Walk Your Romance, lances seem to be a big thing. And I'm like, okay, yeah, that was a harem high school anime where you had a bunch of high schoolers learning how to fight with lances. Because that's the normal pastime in a high school.
Yeah, seemed like a very practical weapon as well.
Yeah.
There's an anime that I can't remember what it's called. It's to do with alchemy. It has a big red...
Full Metal Alchemist?
Has a big red lance on the main character's arm. In the first episode, a girl exchanges his heart with a alchemy stone to save his life, but it also puts him into a war thing.
I've seen footage of this, but I haven't watched it.
I'm trying to remember the name of this.
It's another one where lances are very situational weapon, really.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess there's like a cool factor that they just want to shoehorn them in. I mean, it's a game, but it's anime style, so it counts, whatever. Valkyria Chronicles, but there's an anime of that as well, come to think of it. The lances.
Yes,
They're rocket classes, but why are they lances? I don't know.
It's not...
No reason.
With a high schooler, though, it's not like you can hide the lancer anywhere.
Yeah.
Oh, no. It's called Lances and Masks, because when he wields a lance, he wears a mask.
Oh, God, yes.
Well,
yes.
In Persona 4, it's been established you can hide pretty much anything under a school uniform, so...
Yeah.
But how's that going to... Like, stop, evildoer. I have a lance.
Yes.
I have a 5-foot range. You have a firearm. And Buso Renkin
is
the anime
I was
talking about.
Yes, that's
well.
It. Yes, yes, yes.
I literally just Googled Alchemy Lance Anime and went through till I could find it.
But there's a few more that caught my attention. Subete ga F. Ninaru, or The Perfect Insider. That one caught my attention mainly because the kind of Escher background on the imagery.
Mm-hmm. The never-ending staircase in the background.
It looks like a straight up mystery type thing, and I kind of like my mysteries every now and then. One that caught both mine and your attention was Sokyo no Fafner, Dead Aggressor, or the second series of the Exodus second season. Now, you're not as familiar with Fafner as I am.
No, I have no familiarity with it. I just kind of saw it and I thought, hey, this looks cool.
Fafner is a bit like Evangelion in terms of its setting. You have like a secret military base, high schoolers, everything like that. And they have these mechs there. But it's kind of this island is protected from the rest of the world because the rest of the world is being attacked by these things, these alien beings.
Mm.
And... it's basically an ongoing war of extinction. Humans are basically becoming extinct because of these alien creatures who they can barely communicate with them. And there's a lot of death. There's a lot of death in Fafner. A lot of the kids die.
Just a thought, of all the synopsis we've read, no one this season has been stuck in a game.
Yeah, I know. I think the game thing's kind of dying a death. I think Resurrection is the next big thing.
So Overlord was the last.
Yeah. I think Overlord, maybe another season of Log Horizon, which they could do with this third season. But after that, I think that one's pretty much dead. The last one that caught my attention, though, was Garo Gura Natsuki, which is the second anime adaptation of the Garo series.
Mm-hmm.
Are you guys familiar with Garo?
No.
Is that about Guy Arrow?
Do you remember a game called Garo Mark of the Wolves?
The name sounds familiar, actually. Well,
it's
Mark
kind of
the Wolves,
a fighting
least.
Game.
Maybe. I've been talking for like an hour. My mind is burnt out by like, you're just throwing words at me at this point.
Anyway, yeah, I watched the first season of Garo and I thought it was decent enough, so I'll probably end up watching this one as well. And obviously, One Punch Man is still top of the list. And continuing on with Gate and various other things from last season.
I mean, I think we've
talked... You were disappointed with Gate last time you were telling me about.
I was disappointed, but that doesn't mean to say I'm going to just stop watching just because I'm disappointed. I want to watch the whole thing and be properly disappointed.
I need to see it all so I can accurately criticise it.
Yes. Unfortunately, it's one of those situations. Overlord did improve.
Mm.
Overlord did improve.
We did give it, like, on its first... when it first came out, like, last season, the summer anime season, we did give it a bit of a damning review based on its first two very slow plodding episodes.
It did improve a lot after that. So
still, I'd say it improved a lot, but I wouldn't say it was.
I wouldn't say it was up, in the territory of being a great. It's just it was nice that it improved a lot.
Yeah, it became watchable.
Yes,
rather than it became great.
It became watchable rather than it became something I would put on to fall asleep.
It's now become background noise for when you want something on in the background while you're working.
I can actually sit and watch it.
Oh, fair enough.
It's moved past the level of being
background noise to being watchable. Okay.
It moved from not being watchable to...
Also, it bypassed background noise.
Well, background noise you don't watch.
Congratulations.
Whatever.
So, Gate is still at the level of being high-end background noise. So it's just kind of teetering on the verge of going over into being watchable.
I haven't watched the full 12 episodes, but... Gangster started off strong and continued strong.
I think I've got the last two episodes to watch. Amazing. Also, a boring world where the concept of a dirty joke doesn't exist.
Shimonetta.
Yes.
Yes.
I've heard good
things about that one.
It is just absolutely hilarious.
Have you been watching that one, Lewis?
Shimonetta. No, but it was mentioned before, and I'm just like, it just sounds so ridiculous, but it also sounds so different from the reality that we occupy. It's an entirely different thing. So it's interesting.
Based on a Japan where censorship has gone so far that kids don't know what sex is whatsoever.
Like, and her superpower
bad
is
words,
wearing
stuff
like, on her head.
Completely banned.
Yeah, they look like hentai Carmen.
Yeah. Yeah, anyway, I think that pretty much covers...
I got one more.
Oh, you got one more?
One called Komori-san wa Kotoarenai, which I think means Komori-san can't refuse. It's a manga. It's a slice of life thing. It's about a girl in middle school who just cannot refuse anybody.
This is the one where she's like, she's supposed to be like really strong because of the fact that she doesn't turn anyone down when they make a request of her.
That's what the synopsis says, and it was interesting to me because there's always this part of me that doesn't want to get on people's bad side. But it can be very draining at times, and I think it's interesting to see it in animated form.
Okay.
But it depends how they handle it.
I actually do know there is one more that I've got my eye on.
One more thing.
Yeah, one more thing. Jackie?
By the way, I only just realised today the Jackie Chan in that animated series wasn't voiced by Jackie Chan. I'm sorry
that I had to break that to you earlier,
Ben. You destroyed my life, Dave.
So, anyway... I like the idea of the main character in that one, because it's nice. It's nice to have a main character.
I think a lot of people can relate to that concept.
Well, weirdly,
I think.
Weirdly, it almost reminded me of the idea behind the film Anne Hathaway, L.A. Enchanted. Was it?
Yeah,
where she had to say yes to everything if asked.
Yeah.
Mm.
But I like the fact that the main character just seems to be a genuinely nice person. I think it's becoming a rarity in anime. Where you have a main character who is just simply nice. You know, they're just simply nice and kind and helpful. They're not trying to be a busybody. They don't stick their nose into other people's business. They just basically, if somebody asks them to give them a hand with something, they'll say, yeah,
interesting you say that because, you know, from a lot of, you know, just the forums that I've encountered, it doesn't really appeal to people, at least not Westerners, who are into fans of anime. But I think it's a breath of fresh air.
Yeah, I think it sounds quite nice. I mean, one of the last ones, and this is purely because...
One more thing!
No, this is the one that I was going to mention.
We had a lot of one more thing so
this
far.
This is basically the last one, and I've just literally remembered this because I've seen the image, and I thought, right, it's got the number 35 in. And
so you were mourning earlier that Bleach should have ended on the final Jessica Tenchu.
Yeah, I know, I'm really bad at it as well. This one is just to mention, it's this 35th Test Platoon one.
Mm-hmm.
I've been reading the manga, and at a certain point of the manga, the main character gets cut in half. Yeah.
Spoilers.
No, the main character gets cut in half.
Gonna watch that anime.
then somehow gets resurrected and more powerful. Just leaving it at that because the manga kind of stalled after that. So I am probably going to watch this to find out what the hell happened after he got cut in half.
Don't tell me like he just double teamed the opponent with the two halves of his body.
Yeah, like
see, that would be imagine. That would be hilarious if he was just hopping along on his hand and hitting him with his legs.
That one boss in Lollipop Chainsaw where the legs are going around kicking you, yeah. And the top body's floating around.
To be honest, I think he'd be the main power of being in two and just, you know, being able to still fight was just how much you can terrify the opponent. Just being fully operational like that.
Ah, little do you know, I was bitten by a radioactive worm and I will grow another half.
Only problem is just like two pairs of legs stuck together.
So this new anime is Worm Man then.
So yeah, that's the other one I'll probably end up watching.
Who'd win the fight, Queen or Worm Man?
Queen, obviously. She can order Worm Man to eat his own, eat himself. Then he becomes a Roboros and then he's useless.
All right, before Rob finds another anime to talk about.
No, I'm done. I'm done.
I was trying to bring it full circle with what we were talking about.
Yeah.
That's the end of Keyframe for this week. Check us out on Facebook. Just look for The Geek Show. Here's up on Twitter at @TGS_TheGeekShow. Check out our back catalogue on thegeekshow.co.uk. For now, I have been Ben.
I've been Rob.
I've been Lewis.
I was Worm Man. I mean Dave.
We'll see you next week.